It's episode 39 of the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. Just because it's the off-season doesn't mean we stop. Well, the England team certainly aren't. Came within a whisker of a win against New Zealand, and we'll be talking about that, as well as all the other internationals and some other things which are tickling our fancy in the off-season. I'm Tim, he's JB.
Hi, Tim.
And that's Phil.
Hi, Tim.
Hold on. You on?
Wrong mic.
Go on, move that around, JB.
Hello.
Oh, shambolic.
My headphones aren't working.
Sorry, guys.
This is third world. Let's have a look.
Lads, we've got a very important announcement before we get on with the podcast. We've got another famous celebrity listener.
Ooh.
Hello. I'm Phil Neville, the BBC's football commentator. When I'm not boring people during England matches with my monotonous style, I listen to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. It is almost as entertaining as I am.
Phil Neville. Phil Neville's a big fan.
Wow. Yeah, how did you get that, Tim?
Well, you know, he took a break from his busy schedule commentating on the matches. I do think one thing when I was watching the England-Italy World Cup match the other night is I was thinking, I think JB might finally have someone he dislikes during matches more than Stuart Barnes.
I didn't even notice him. I'd best be the only person in the world not to notice him. I was very impressed by the game. I like the way that Roy Hodgson let the boys play. He just off they went.
Well, I thought something on Saturday morning as I was watching England v New Zealand. I thought, and I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again, I don't mind Stuart Barnes. I quite like him.
He's an idiot.
It's like I quite like Dean Ryan as a director of rugby. I haven't got a problem with him.
And you quite like the other Barnes as a ref as well, I guess.
Wayne Barnes, I think, is a decent ref.
Well,
yeah.
Great ref. No, the problem is, right, that Neville isn't really a commentator, so he, you know, he got thrown in, and that's fine. Stuart Barnes, however, he's even got a small documentary called Life Behind the Mic on Sky, yet he's completely useless at commentating. And he's got that little trick. Have you ever seen that little trick he does at the start of a game? And what he'll do is he'll pick up a motion, say someone's running with the ball, and he crashes it into contact. He goes, well, with that run, what he's saying is dot, 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 dot. But usually the dot, dot, dot he fills it in with. So he'll go, what he's saying with that run is that he's really, really up for this game. Like, how do you know that just from the body language?
Yeah, his body language is demonstrating to Stuart Lancaster why he needs to be on that pitch.
When did this happen? How do you know?
Well, they say most communication is non-verbal, which I'm sure you can pick up on this podcast as well, all our non-verbal communication that's going on, like these fingers that are going up towards you, JB. Right, so we're going to get into the internationals, obviously, but we've mentioned the World Cup football already and the dire Phil Neville. I mean, like, one of my favourite Twitter accounts is Boring James Milner. Someone, as we speak, I guarantee, is setting up Boring Phil Neville.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. Maybe we should do that.
It's such a shame for Phil Neville, because he's one of those guys that everything he does, he's in the shadow of his brother.
We should set one up called Tragic Mark Wilkinson.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, he's a classic run to the litter, Phil Neville.
Yeah, absolutely.
Worse at football, worse at commentating. The only thing that he was better at was cricket, which he doesn't play, never did anything past 19.
I also heard that his mum likes him more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She tells him that.
Yeah.
She means it.
There was one, I think there's a big similarity going on as we speak between the England rugby team and the England football team.
Go on.
The Manu Tuilagi playing him on the wing, out of position.
Yep.
Wayne Rooney playing him on the left, out of position. Some people are complaining you don't get the best out of one of your prize assets, but then there's other people saying, well, it's about the team as a whole.
I agree.
There's a big, big similarity.
I completely agree.
Where do you stand on either or, well, particularly Tuilagi, as we're talking about rugby?
I think Tuilagi's fine. I mean, Tuilagi spent a lot of time on the wing at Leicester before he's moved into centre. I don't see any problem with it whatsoever.
He played a bit. I can recall a few games when he first started when he played on the wing, but not many, and certainly not for a couple of years. But I think he's good enough to do it.
What's the difference?
I think he's... So I don't have a huge problem with Tuilagi playing on the wing.
We had this debate with a few friends of ours, and a good friend of ours, in fact, CJ, a friend of the show, decreed that you can't possibly play wing without a world-class kicking game. Oh, no, a kicking game. Is that fair? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it might have been like you needed extraordinary kicking talent to play on the wing.
Well, what was interesting, there was hardly any kicking in that match on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From either team. There was more from New Zealand than from England.
Bring back Kenny Logan.
The boys were really throwing it about. Tuilagi a couple of times pretty risky.
Yeah.
Like offloads in his own 22 when he's got men on him.
He won't die wondering.
Here's the difference between the England football team and the England rugby team, though. In the case of the England football team,
1,000 kg.
Rooney was moved across to out of position to accommodate two players who played superbly well. Mm-hmm. Tuilagi was moved out of position to accommodate two players who arguably were the weak link for England.
I don't think they were. I thought Burrell missed one or two tricks. I thought Twelvetrees looked close.
I thought Billy Twelvetrees was at fault for, well, certainly one of New Zealand's tries. That the one there where they cantered in and ran around the outside, where Billy Twelvetrees gave an offload that was never on. Yeah. And he should never have given.
He does distribute nicely. I know it's a cliche and I'll say, oh, he's a distributing offload, but he really is. I thought he looked superb at times.
He made a great break.
Yeah, he did.
But I did think he played pretty poorly by his standards. And it's an interesting one that... So he dropped Kyle Eastman, who not had much game in the last few months, but brought in Twelvetrees, who's not had much game time in the last few months. And Eastman played well last week, but Twelvetrees didn't play particularly well. So it will be interesting to see if Eastman gets his place back.
I think they stick... Well,
I think they'll stick. I think they'll stick with as they are. And I think it's important, because they did so well in the Six Nations together, I think it's important to see what this pair can do. But what I think against New Zealand exposed is, when they made line breaks, they made them through the centres.
Although I thought Farrell had a few missed tackles, though. Not missed tackles, but half tackles, you know?
Yeah, he did. They did make him through the centres. Part of that, though, was because they played such quick ball that there were often forwards in the centres. Like the Ben Smith try.
Yeah.
It was Dave Wilson, I think, Parlin, Launchbury, and then Robshaw was the final man covering for the final pass. So they were ghosting through. Props were out of position because New Zealand were playing with such tempo.
And partly because you cannot cough up cheap ball.
Yeah.
Billy Twelvetrees, I think he's a real talent. I think he's important for Owen Farrell, and I think he can release Manu Tuilagi and Luther Burrell and stuff, but he's got to start. He's got to get better at knowing when to give and when not to. Because, yeah, distribution is his strength, but he coughed up that try that New Zealand scored.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I just wonder. I mean, I'm fine with Tuilagi on the wing. I think he's good enough. I just wonder, would Johnny May have scored that the 80-metre try where he got caught by Ben Smith? Possibly.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Is there that much of a difference in pace?
Ben Smith did have the angle.
Mm.
And Tuilagi's quick, but...
You'll know what it's like covering across in that position, Phil. You playing in the back three a lot. And what I was thinking is, by trying to go in a straight line, Tuilagi just gave Ben Smith more advantage than he necessarily had to have, because Ben Smith was running at full tilt, a little jink inside, and he's got the weak shoulder of Ben Smith, hasn't he?
Tell you the other thing as well,
What is good to do then, if you can, is step towards him, like you say, and he has to stop, and then if you can accelerate around him, that's the perfect... It depends on the angles, though, and it depends on the timing when he comes across. I thought Ben Smith did really well in that position. It was fantastic tackle.
And I also thought Matt Brown, it's a UFC fighter, the other Brown.
Mike Brown.
Mike Brown, thank you. Kind of saw him short a bit, because...
He seems
to be running away from him, and then someone's in between Mike Brown. Who's the All Black between Mike Brown and Tuilagi making the pass not possible?
I couldn't say who it was. But,
yeah, so someone's coming back and they're in between them.
Mike Brown seemed to drift away from him rather than follow him tightly, because you only need to be 2 metres, 3 metres away to give it a one-on-one pass, and it's a try.
I thought Mike Brown looked at about 75% of what Mike Brown actually is. I think he was injured.
Well, the last two games is not...
Is he suffering from a hamstring or something?
He had a hamstring injury.
Yeah, you can definitely tell then.
Doubt for the first test, and he's not played to his standard. No.
I'm sure at one point he was limping. I'm sure he was.
Maybe. But yeah, Tuilagi is good enough to do it. Don't forget that was his first game playing wing in a long time, and it's a hell of a level to be dropped in at.
Yeah, it's not that hard though, is it?
And I suppose we need to learn at this stage, are Burrell and Twelvetrees, the centre partnership, because we're aspiring to win the World Cup next year.
Definitely.
I think they are.
We need to know if they are. And yeah, they may well be, they may not be, but you're not going to find out unless you...
But it's, you know, Burrell did something silly, which was he was running a switch angle with Molignard. And Molignard, I mean, don't think he was clean through by any means, but he had space. And we've seen time and time again, Molignard, all he needs is a bit of a gap and he can make something happen. And he was coming in, and Burrell had the perfect opportunity to put the ball back inside. He just died with it. If I was Jim Redknapp, I'd now say, he literally just died with it.
He's a top player.
Yeah.
Top player.
Top player.
But literally just died with it.
The best one of those was Jamie Redknapp said, Michael Owen is about this years ago. Michael Owen is literally a greyhound.
I thought it was really funny. Like he's literally left him for dead there. Wonderful.
Ben Smith, though, you mentioned him. What a player. We've talked about him before on the
literally
podcast.
Literally an accountant.
About how impressive he is. When he slotted in for Conrad Smith, it was like they didn't miss Conrad Smith. When he slots in for Israel Dagg, they don't miss Israel Dagg. In fact, it enhanced the All Black team.
He's a talented boy.
He really, really talented boy.
We've all played with people who, when they trot out on the pitch, you wouldn't be intimidated or worried about them at all. And then when they play, you go, my God, that guy's a player. And the same way, the reverse. We've all played when there's these mute beasts that walk out of the changing room. You think, oh, my God, we're in for a tough one. And then you see them run or try and catch. And
I played at some ridiculously low level. Sorry, Obedience Rugby. I didn't mean it like that. But for Obedience Rugby team in Manchester, we played like Northwich or someone like that. We got there and they're all wearing like wife beater vests and they all looked massive. I've never played against the worst team in all my life. They were awful. Played on like an old cricket ground.
And on the flip side, I'm sorry, I know you were going to say something then, Phil. I'll just quickly chuck this one in. On the flip side, I remember the going for the Exeter University, just kind of trying out for the team and all that. And this lad was there and it was like, he looked like a prop. And they went, what position do you play? He's centre. And you could tell everyone was like, "All right, okay, fine. Let's just put this guy in." He absolutely bossed the trial match, and it was a guy called Ben Thompson who had a really good career in the Championship playing for Exeter Chiefs
and
Nottingham Rugby. Really, really good player. But he just the first glance when he saw him, he thought, "There's a loose head prop. What's centre?" And he's played fullback, flyer.
I'd make him play a loose head prop. Make him.
Sorry, Phil, what were you going to say?
No, well, the point I was going to make is one I've made before, but the lower down rugby level you get, the better someone looks, the worse they are. You come up against like a 6'4 winger who's like 17 stone, really athletic, really like muscular, vascular legs, and they're just useless. They've been put on the wing because
they look like
they should be good, but they're not.
But Ben Smith is one of those that doesn't look like... I suppose he's like Kieran Reid in that sense.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely like Kieran Reid.
Far more impressive in reality than how they look when you just take a glance at them.
Yeah.
Real, real talent.
Are there any other players that...
Well, James Haskell is my one of someone who...
He's the opposite.
I mean, he looks like he should be one of the world's best.
Mm.
And he's not actually... He's not as good as the specimen that you look at implies.
Well, you look at him next to, say, Tom Wood... And he's obviously like much more muscular, like looks a lot more athletic.
No, Wood looks like the prototypical rugby player with that beard and like that lean.
No, but he looks lean by comparison. And you think of the modern day with these massive men.
Know.
I don't think Tom Wood, to stand next to him, you would think, oh, you're a big slice. But he doesn't look like a massive man in the context of all the other players.
And I imagine that Haskell in the gym would beat him at everything, like quite comfortably as well.
What about... what's his name? Andy Powell?
Yeah.
That's a classic guy.
He's a classic.
Monstrous.
Haskell type. PSBs.
PSBs.
PSBs. Oh my God, he should be the greatest number eight that's ever walked on the earth. Look at him.
I've said this loads of times, he's too talented to be good. He doesn't know what it is to work hard, it just comes too easy, so he'll never be any good. Jamie Noon? Yeah. Jamie Noon had this huge chest, big guns, traps.
Incredible jaw.
Buzz Lightyear jaw,
Concrete hands, all the things that you look for in a centre. How about this one? Marius I can't say his name.
Podzanowski. The world's strongest man.
Playing rugby. You've seen that?
I've not seen
any videos. Oh, yeah. He's in kit and stuff, but he's useless. He also tried MMA and he got beaten up.
Shane Williams shouldn't be one of the greatest wingers that we've had in the modern game.
Well,
but he's incredible.
Brian O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
Does not look... particularly athletic.
But it's not just that he's got an outside break or a great step or all the stuff that you associate with speed. The fact his defence was as good as any...
Yeah, as anyone, any back row.
Johnny Sexton shouldn't be a professional sportsman, should he?
No. Freddie Burns.
No.
Another former New Zealand fullback, Christian Cullen.
Oh, yeah.
Was so much better. He was incredible.
Well, the thing is with Christian Cullen as well, he's in the area where... Kit didn't look professional, so he like literally scissored off all black sleeves.
Yeah,
and,
massive, massive baggy shirt,
big baggy cotton shirt.
Yeah. Sorry, Christian, the only one we've got is an XXXL. And then socks down to his ankles.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff. If you've got any more suggestions for that, @rugbypodcast on Twitter. Well, mentioning bodies and big people, there's one footballer in the World Cup who sounds like he should be a rugby player. That's Brazilian wide midfielder slash striker Hulk.
Well, I was actually with a friend of mine watching the Brazil guy game. So
Brazil guy.
And he goes, "Have you seen the shoulders on this guy?" And we looked at him. He's this guy Hulk. He goes, he's absolutely massive. To be fair, he is a big boy. He's exactly the same size as Dwayne Peel.
well. So yeah, we looked at his weight.
This guy Hulk, who's regarded to be a beast of a footballer,
he looks like a big boy compared to some of those. Like, put him next to Neymar.
Yeah,
Neymar who's about 7.5 stone, and yeah, you compare him to some rugby players. So we couldn't find a concrete weight on Hulk. He's somewhere between 75 and 85 kg.
I'll give him benefit of the doubt and said 85.
Well, if he's 75 and 85, that's between Shane Williams and Dwayne Peel.
Yeah. So he's 85. He's bigger than Morgan Power and Shane Williams. But he's similar size, not smaller than Dwayne Peel, Danny Cipriani, Danny Kerr, and Richard Wigglesworth.
Owen Redden, similar size.
I do love this. Like when there was often these videos back in the day or whatever, often narrated by Vinnie Jones, that they go, "For Father's Day, what every dad wants, football's hard men," and they'd have this video of football's hard men. And actually, the reality is they would get battered by Shane Williams.
I think there's something in the Hulk, because maybe he is big for a small guy. Footballer.
What, Hulk?
Yeah, so I've turned it into a scale. So James Johnson is 1.4 Hulks. Edwin Macca is 1.5 Hulks. And Una Antonio is 1.9 Hulks.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a big old slice. Baruchel tight head.
How many Hulks are you at the minute? Because you're bigger than you've been in it.
2.4 Hulks.
Yeah, excellent. Right, brilliant. Listen, I've organised a rugby social for us.
Oh, excellent.
This is where, rugby socials are something which go on periodically through the season. You have a little drink and all the rest of it with your rugby teammates. But on the podcast, it is celebrating the fact that rugby players have really got on board with this Twitter malarkey. They love a bit of social media. So I've got some social media comments from some rugby players and I'm going to put Phil up against JB and see if they can work out who said what. Here we go, rugby social. First question relates to Ugo Monye. Ugo Monye met who and said what? Was it Miley Cyrus, who twerked all over him? Was it Nicole Scherzinger, who had the finest body he's ever seen? Was it Serena Williams, who he said had the biggest, roundest bum he'd ever seen?
Okay.
Biggest roundest bum. He plays with Kyle Sinclair, so can't be that.
No, it can't be that. He also... yeah, okay. Who do you mean? So,
I'm going to say Nicole Scherzinger and her incredible body.
Is she English? Is she British-based? Or anyone British-based?
Well, she's
Serena Williams.
Ooh.
Serena Williams. I'm going to say Serena Williams because she's here to play tennis.
Serena Williams is the correct answer.
Yes!
He loves getting selfies with celebs. There's Ugo Monye, and he got one with Serena Williams and said she had the biggest, roundest bum he'd ever seen.
Delicious.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, next question. Dylan Hartley sent a one-word tweet with a hashtag. Did he send a tweet that
sausage.
that just said hashtag moist, hashtag balls, hashtag humping?
Ooh.
Jay, what do you think?
Hashtag moist, hashtag balls, hashtag humping. Moist for me.
You prefer moist over balls.
I never said that. do not put things in my mouth, Tim.
I'm going to go with Jay. I'm going to say there's some terrible weather in New Zealand, and he's hashtag moist.
Oh, yes, well then.
Moist is the correct answer. Well done.
On a roll.
Right, Dean Schofield now, the Worcester Warriors lock.
Excellent player.
In the build-up to the England-Italy football match, what did Dean Schofield do? Did he eat a cake that he baked? Did he pluck his eyebrows? Did he eat a Solero that he bought?
Solero.
Eat a cake, eat a Solero, or pluck his eyebrows.
Could be any of them.
It really could be. Okay, Solero. tropical fruit based.
It's very very Brazilian, isn't it?
It is so very Brazilian. Very,
like, Southern American.
Plucking your eyebrows.
Phil, you go first.
I can't see why plucking your eyebrows would be in there. No, but I'm going to go for it. I'm going to say
plucked his eyebrows.
Plucking his eyebrows.
Right, Jay.
It is a rage, isn't it, to show how into food you are just to put something on Twitter. Oh, look, I've baked some bread. Maybe it is that. I'm going to go with the cake.
It was the eating a Solero.
Oh,
you're both wrong.
I still win.
JB takes Rugby Social. Well
have
done.
That's well.
Oh, yeah, of course you did. Ah, sorry.
Well done. And we move on. Well, let's talk about some of the other internationals. Let's talk about the internationals in general. So England, New Zealand, and we've talked about the Tuolagi and the general and some various things about that.
Mm-hmm.
Can England get this victory that they're after to bring home with them? And even if they do, does it mentally, are they going to take what they needed from this trip?
I think they needed to win the tests. The test series. Personally, what I think.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be gallant losers. I mean, all that New Zealand needs to do now is field a weakened team. And, you know, whatever plans that they had, they're going to come away thinking that we haven't really done the job.
That's an interesting point.
Well, that's what I'd do. If I was New Zealand, I'd blood all of my young players now.
Because then you can't lose.
You can't lose, and then England
go home. If
England
win, it's like they got a consolation.
Yeah.
Not real.
And that'll really haunt them.
I think that first test will haunt them. I think that second test, they lost by 1 point, but...
It's the worst defeat, though.
New Zealand were the better team, yeah. That try at the end kind of papered over the cracks a bit.
I kind of think if they had the same team first and second test, I don't mean they've played the first test team in the second test. I mean, like, they had a consistent
team.
They might have won.
Because that's what New Zealand had. So, yeah.
But by that token, we wouldn't have had what arguably the best player over the two tests for me has been Jeff Parling.
Maybe. Mind you,
I would argue for England. And we wouldn't have had him in the 15 had they played the same team for two tests.
No, I mean, he does make a difference because New Zealand were doing a lot of front ball, which is quite a lot of respect to line-out.
Line-out success was only 80% compared to 100% last week.
Just on the line-out, I did notice one thing. England managed to defend any driving maul New Zealand did, and they did it by only putting in about two or three players in defence.
Mm.
The whole forwards fanned out around the fringes, and about three men, it was basically Marler and a couple of others, it was always Marler, managed to hold up the whole New Zealand eight doing a driving maul. I was really impressed by it anyway.
Well, remember Sale had a similar sort of tactic with Wahongi?
Yeah.
They just used to leave Wahongi there and he used to hold it the entire maul. Everyone used to spread out. It was very effective.
I thought Farrell's yellow card was really harsh.
Yeah, but what was it for again? I don't even remember now.
It was for not rolling away. But this really annoys me, and I hope the IRB, I hope they just clarify this, because the rules are, if a maul collapses, players don't have to move.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, on the one hand, really annoys me, because basically, if someone manages to make a choke tackle, and Ireland do this a lot, they make a choke tackle, they hold the guy up, and then as soon as the ref calls maul, they just pull it down and lie on the ball, and he goes, right, scrum, defending tight side ball. That's fine. That annoys me a little bit. Mm. But that is the laws. That's what Farrell got a yellow card for. It was a maul that collapsed. Ooh, Farrell doesn't have to move, and he gave him a yellow card for not rolling away.
Yeah, the problem with that was that there weren't enough players in to...
No.
Because normally when you get a maul, everyone just dives in. So
I don't really mind yellow cards for technical infringements.
But the laws... referee didn't implement the laws of the game. The referee should have said, scrum England. Because Farrell was under no obligation to move by the IRB's own laws, but I think the laws are wrong and they should change it.
Yeah,
am I making any sense?
Yeah, yes. You are making sense.
Exactly.
Kind of like I'm annoyed that Jarrod Payne got a red card because that shouldn't be the law.
but it
is the law.
In your mind.
No, in everyone's mind.
Let's not go on.
In everyone's mind.
Listen back to the podcast after Jarrod Payne's red card if you want to hear a really, really...
Long
and...
discussion about
free Jarrod. Hashtag free Jarrod.
What else did you see in that game? Did the players that came in...
Thought Davey Wilson did awesome.
Yeah.
Thought he looked really, really good.
Well, he didn't look... Let's be fair, he doesn't look... You can never say
old Lego
phrase
head.
David Wilson and look good in the same sentence. He looks like a...
Fair enough.
He looks like a big gargoyle.
David Wilson, it's from the northeast, right?
I think so, yeah.
So has he copied Cheryl Cole with that, like, barbed wire thigh tattoo
nice.
That he's got?
I think everyone in...
I think everyone in the North East
has to have a certain amount of body underneath ink. I think that's the rule, isn't it?
Well, David Wilson, if you're not... You know, he never shows his bum, but he's got roses all over his bum, like Cheryl Cole as well.
Cheryl Cole. Ugh.
I thought Morgan got closed down much better than last week. They were obviously well aware of the danger of him. But then at the end, when you had Laws on, you had Vunipola on, obviously Burrell and Tuilagi were all on. The New Zealand defence was excellent, like really just stopping them making yards.
Gallant losers again.
Unfortunately.
Anyone see the Welsh game?
Yes. I dozed through the Welsh game.
No, good. Good for you.
The bits that I saw, it looked like they just got battered.
Yeah, pretty much. Dan Bigger slotted two drop goals. That was impressive because he slotted two drop goals. And Alex Cuthbert scored pretty much a wonder try.
A wonder try or was it just...
It was a wonder.
No one wanted to tackle him, really.
That counts as a wonder try.
Okay.
It's psychological warfare.
Well, it was from 70, 80 yards out, so it does count.
When the South Africans don't want to tackle you, you're doing something right. George North continues to flatter to deceive, in my opinion. Surely we'll get some Twitter response now saying that I'm an idiot. But I don't think he's actually done that much this year.
Since the Lions?
No, he scores important tries by barreling over, but like basically tries that forwards could score because he's a big lad. But I've not seen him do anything, really.
That one where he tied the game up at King's Home, where he returned that kick and put in Jamie Elliott.
Yeah, okay.
That was the George North.
Yeah, that's what we want to see. I suppose he's
you're not going to
so
see
high.
That every week.
Well, that's what I want, twice a week. I want to see that twice a week.
You demand that.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want to see him doing what Cuthbert did.
And also, because he's such a known quantity now, teams will go in and go, right, this is how we shut down George North.
Yeah.
But in doing so, he will open up gaps for other people.
Yeah.
Because they'll be worrying about... You have to worry about him, don't you?
Jonathan Davis didn't look as good as he usually does. I was really hoping that Jonathan Davis just, light the place on fire. The problem is with this, right, is South Africa are basically a really good version of Wales. They just do everything Wales do, but better.
But a lot better.
Not a lot better, just marginally better.
Enough to beat them by 20
well,
points.
They're at home as well.
What I find really exciting about England is, and again, another similarity between the football and the rugby teams, is there's a real exciting, young, talented bunch of people coming through. What I do like about South Africa is they recognise experience and the value of experience and age. Bakkie Botha and Victor Matfield in your second round. I just love it. I love watching those two play.
Victor Matfield is an interesting call. He's 37. And it's 18 months until the World Cup. Well, to make him captain, to bring him back in and make him captain is a big
Have I said
call.
This already once? But this isn't the first time that they've done it. They did it with Bob Skinstad. Yeah, they brought him back and they made him captain too. Yeah.
But at what age?
Bob Skinstad was in Richmond playing rugby, touch rugby for his local Christian missionary group. I'm not even joking. He was, and they brought him back.
Brilliant. They have got some good young talent though. That centre they brought in, the inside centre.
Yeah, he hit someone very hard.
Was North or Roberts?
Hit him hard.
And he made some good yards. He looks like a very good player.
Yeah, I didn't realise this. Matfield's considerably older than Botha. He's like 3 years older.
Yeah.
I thought they were like born together, like same maternity ward, grew up together. But no, the 3 years difference.
Scotland narrowly beat Canada.
Right, okay.
France lost 6-0 to Australia. How you go from that game last week to that game this week?
I had that game recorded. I was looking forward to watching it because France strengthened their team. Australia have got a really good attacking team. And then I saw the result and I just deleted it from my Skybox. There's no way I was going to watch it.
Did Australia take the field with no backs?
Well,
or one back?
I read a report just to find out like what on earth happened. And it described it as an ugly, low-quality match that even purists would have struggled to appreciate.
Wow.
Wow.
What happened? If someone knows what happened, if someone actually bothered to watch it and stayed awake during it, please...
If you can fix it on Twitter, let us know. Yeah.
And Ireland beat Argentina again.
It wasn't really Argentina, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, we watched a bit of that, but it didn't seem like a great
game. It's a miserable-looking game. Like, it's standard definition, which is a problem. On top of that, it wasn't anyone really I recognised in the Argentine ranks. And the stadium looked like it was from the 80s or something.
Could have been worse. Phil Neville could have been summarising.
Right,
so more internationals this coming weekend, which we'll get to in a little bit. But we have got the Fan Free Agency opening up again. We need to get some music for this.
I thought we had the little, of course. I don't know how I'm going to do this, because some of these are like essays. But they're very good essays.
Right, so we have the Fan Free Agency. This is where you can pitch, like, kind of Dragon, think kind of Dragon's Den style. You come up, sit in front of Phil, who doesn't have a rugby team at all.
Very meek, polite dragon.
Yeah, exactly. Very small dragon. Phil has been man and boy, Sesley Park, who's played for. He has never supported a team. He's always played for the team that he plays for and grew up with. Now he's in the position where he's no longer playing for Sesley Park and he doesn't have a team. And he has no affiliation whatsoever. So his fandom is open season. It could be your team. Phil's going to pick a team by the start of the season and he will completely dedicate himself to that team. We'll go and do a podcast from the ground and come and watch a match. He'll buy a first team shirt.
Buy a season ticket, I think.
Oh, yeah, season ticket, yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, we're waiting for you, Bermuda RFC. Make your pitch.
Last week, Rory put a very good case forward for Ulster.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't really do that pitch credit.
Quite a lot of support for Ulster.
Yeah, we need to do more for the Irish fans, I think.
Very tempting. It's certainly the front runner at the moment.
Yeah, if it ended today, you'd be an Ulster fan.
Definitely.
But it hasn't ended today. So I've got two, and they are basically local-ish rivals. I'll read them out, and then I think what we should do, I mean, you don't have to, but I think you should eliminate one of them.
If there's a clear winner, I'll eliminate one of them. If not, they can join Ulster in my potential pile.
OK.
Let's just hear the last bit of music before we go into this. We've journeyed far, but I know it won't be long. We're almost there and we've paid our fare with a
hobo song. Maybe tomorrow I want to settle down.
Feels weird not making
Sorry.
A pipe during this.
So you can get in touch and put forward the reasons why your club should be the one that Phil chooses. Whatever reason you think, whatever your club has as its big selling point, its unique selling point, you've got to try and beat the other teams. It could be you have great ales in your clubhouse at good prices. It could be that your stash is the best. For example, if I was Harlequins, I might be getting in touch going, Adidas are now making our kit.
Ooh.
I saw that. Have you actually seen a picture of it?
I haven't seen a picture of the kit, but I can't wait because this Adidas is going to be awesome.
I think Nike and Adidas make the best stash. I just do.
They
just
do make the
just
best
on
stash.
That, let me show you this picture that Jay's already seen of the French training stash from this weekend. Adidas. Oh. It is spectacular.
Three words for that. Ooh, la, and la.
Wow. Look at those men. That training kit is just outstanding.
It's not like the Welsh training kit. Oh, it is, though, isn't
it? We are in the golden age of stash right now, aren't we?
It is wonderful, isn't it?
That kit, describe that, Jay.
It's red and blue.
It's bright red. Caught a few minutes of the Australia-France game. And I just think the French kit is just gorgeous with that stripe across the back.
Why is Jerry Guscott wearing the French kit?
Oh, it's just, let me see that again. I'm going to have to Google that with Safe Search off. that's a thing of beauty, that training stash.
Safe Search.
Check out our Twitter account if you want to see it, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. So, we've got some more contenders trying to get Phil as a supporter.
Okay.
Come on,
so here you go, number one. Hi, Phil. Here are a few reasons why you should support Exeter Chiefs. The unfashionable club, from the media's point of view, as relative newcomers to the top table of English rugby, despite all the hoops we had to jump through. We have no famous ex-players. Well, that's not entirely true, but still. And in media circles, we have no one to push our players for international honours. OK, so...
Hold on, I'm just trying to find some music.
What kind of music is this?
Hold on. No. Oh, what's that music called? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, maybe you could just sing it whilst I read it.
Oh,
is that actually from something? Chiefs is a superbly run club operating in a correct and stable way, and it turns a profit every year.
That's interesting because, yeah, you'd know that Exeter Chiefs is going to be there in 10 years' time.
Phil values accountancy.
I don't think
anyone values good accountancy more than Phil.
Prudent financial planning.
Which colour is it that's good when you're in the black?
That's correct.
Yeah, so they stay in the black.
Yeah.
That's right. Off the field, the stadium is regularly getting updated, and expansion this year has been readied for 2015 World Cup. But funding is already in place for a longer goal of a 20,000-seater stadium.
Wow.
Nice.
Nice.
Club is led by Rob Baxter, we all know that, who is 100% Exeter rugby. He started off as a ball boy and then stayed with Exeter apart from one season at Gloucester, having played 14 seasons, 10 as captain. When he hung up his boots, he started coaching Exeter Uni. Would that be in your term? your time?
Yeah, I was there at that time. Yeah, they got like a scholarship system, and people like Andy Beattie came along and played. Were playing at Exeter Chiefs and playing at the uni.
Ah, what's he like? You met him?
Yeah, he's exactly as he comes across. He's just softly spoken, nice guy. But apparently, and I've not been trained by him, but apparently, just nails when it comes to training and stuff.
Coach, Exeter Uni and worked with the forwards at Chiefs. In 2009, Rob was handed the top job and took his club to the promised land. LV Cup? Must mean the LV Cup. I'm not going to read all this because there's absolutely loads, but there is a bit here which refers to him being the true West Country, not like Bristol and Bath, which I assume have been contaminated by outsiders. There's also a list of academy players to make it through. So Jack Knoll, Henry Slade, Sam Hill, Luke Cowan-Dickey, all local lads. The boys play the game in the right way too, running multiple phase rugby wherever possible, which is appreciated by its fans. Sandy Park has been voted current rugby venue of the year. Ooh. With a warm West Country welcome for all, except if you're from Bath and Bristol, reading between the lines. It's great otter beer and hog roast too. That sounds exciting.
Ooh, I do like a hog roast.
Ooh, and otter beer. I mean, as long as it's made out of real otters.
So I want to hear about their long history with Native American Indians as well.
There definitely is some sort of, I mean, apparently someone from Exeter went over with smallpox on some blankets and handed them out to the Apaches. I have no idea.
Was it not founded by Native American Indians?
I think it might have been, you know. Yeah. I think they were playing rugby there a long time before the West Country settlers came in.
Last of the Mohicans is about Exeter Chiefs starting up as a club, isn't it? Daniel Day-Lewis plays their very first director of rugby.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so who's the other team?
Good case made for Exeter Chiefs there.
Yeah.
By Matt. The next one is from Rob, I think, Loader. Okay, so, good morning, John. Hope all is well. At the time, it was Rob. So, essential stuff. What he's done here is he's put it into different categories, and I like this. Very organised man.
Are you going to tell us the team now? Or
no, you can guess.
Okay.
Founded in 1856, guess now, Bath Rugby Football Club is one of the oldest clubs in existence. The club played its first European fixture in 1907 against Racing Club de Border something or other, French, I guess, when they crossed the channel to play at the Rec. Since the 60s, Bath have had the ethos of fast attacking rugby. This has never changed, and we still play in the same manner today. I think they went through the phase about 5 years ago when they weren't playing particularly fast or attractive rugby, but we'll let that one slip. Full list of honours speak for itself. One Heineken Cup, one European Challenge Cup, and I think two finals as well somewhere.
Yeah.
The English Premiership, the Courage League, Zurich Premiership back in the day, 89, 91, 92, 93, 94, 96. The John Player Pilkington Cup, 10.
Yeah.
84.
Wow. I went to quite a few of those finals.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Well, 84, 85, 86, 87. had a break in 89. It's had a break in 88. Then it won in 89. 1990, 1992, 1994, 1995, 1996. That's quite impressive.
They were dominant. They were dominant every year, single year. Year after year, we would go from Newbury Rugby Club, we'd always take a coach to Twickenham, whoever was in front.
Oh, my word.
And it was always Bath.
In the professional era, we were the first British team to win the European Cup and the only team to win the domestic cup, by some things. Cool stuff. This is the next thing. The wealth of talent in the current scheme is off the scale. He's listed Matt Garvey, London Irish.
Yeah, thanks to London Irish.
Yeah, Dave Atwood, Gloucester. Kyle Eastmond, Oldham. George Ford, Oldham. Anthony Watson, London Irish. Rob Webber, Wasps. Nathan Katz, local. Jonathan Joseph, London Irish. Rucker Duguni, the Army. Francois Lowe, South African. Paul James, Welsh. And Leroy Houston, Australian.
So they're very good at recruitment.
So top sales pitch, top sale. and it's only going to get better with Henry Thomas from Sale. I like this guy. I'm going to say his name wrong, but Nick Arterick, or the prop from Saracens. And so Sam Burgess.
Mm. Oh wow, you'd get Sam Burgess as well.
Oh, and he's got here. Sam Burgess, who will be playing second row, brackets officially.
He's trying to flatter you there, Phil, with your prediction.
He didn't say that because that'd be ridiculous, and he knows about rugby, so he didn't put that. And Luke Orscott, I'm not sure that's a great signing. Do you think that's a great signing?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
He's a good player, yeah.
Oh, I'm not a fan.
If you just wanted to shut up shop at the back and have someone that's not going to miss a tackle, going to catch everything, going to kick well, you just got an absolutely rock solid pair of hands.
Okay.
I rate him. I think he's a very good player.
Oh, well, I take it back then. The best academy set up in the country, born then, run by legend Danny Grucock. Now, I've got a problem with this. which is all those names that we've just listed did not come from the academy, as all the Exeter names did come from the academy. I'm just saying.
Bath have always had an awesome production line. Maybe it was more so in the past than it is currently. Yeah. When you think Steve Borthwick,
Matt Stevens, Mike Catt. That's loads of them.
Nick Abendanen.
Benders.
Matt Banahan.
London Irish again. From Jersey, went to London Irish. He was playing second row. They realised he was quick and he went to Bath.
I think what they're really, really good at is recruiting people really young. They get out there. My brother was spotted playing under 18s or under 19s Newbury rugby against like Maidenhead, and someone from Bath was there, watched him and went, come along and play. So they're really good at spotting people young.
So I think that's important, but it kind of falls a little bit flat. But there's more. So more important stuff. Unlike other teams such as Exeter, London Welsh and Quins, we've never played Sedgley Park. So there's not an emotional clash there. Now, this, to me, almost seals it. The Rec. The Recreation Ground is by far the most iconic stadium in the country. In my mind, I think it's the best stadium possibly in the world. And that is not a joke. I really do. We are currently in the middle of a very long-term argument with the Charity Commission over the future of the Rec. Having a high-profile superstar name such as Phil as a fan will only benefit the club moving forward.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Back of the net. We have arguably the most passionate and knowledgeable fans in the country. I'm not... Maybe in England. I wouldn't say you do in Ireland.
Yeah.
Judging by some of our other submissions. And Bath is literally buzzing on match days. And I can actually back that up. I've been to a Bath game. It is awesome.
And I live there. And do you know what? I lived there for 7 years. And what I love about Bath is you get the local paper, rugby's on the back page. You walk down the street and you have a chat with someone. They're talking about rugby. It's awesome being in a town where rugby is the number one and the only sport.
It sounds silly, like Oldham. I'm not even joking.
Yeah.
They love rugby league, and they don't even have a rugby league team. So, yeah. Right, OK, so just to summarise, we've got Exeter, the plucky underdogs that spend up to the salary cap.
And do it from a bottom-up approach and build the foundations and grow slowly.
Very slowly.
And are very, very connected with their fans and their local area.
But you might make the argument Bath had already done that in 1890.
Yeah.
So, either way, I think Exeter have it. I mean, this is view, Phil.
Stop, shut up right now, JB. This is Phil's call. Now, the way this is working, Phil, is come the start of the season, you're going to commit to one team. Now, JB's suggested that you rule one team or other out.
You don't have to.
I don't think you have to. I was thinking in X Factor sort of terminology, when they go, you're through to boot camp, you're through to boot room. Ulster are currently through to boot room.
Yes, they certainly are. And I think I'm ready to make a decision.
Go on. I think you should go for Bath.
So, Jay is already an Exeter fan.
Well,
Although he does love Bath as well.
I love Bath so much.
Quite a conflicted Exeter fan. But one of the things that was mentioned was the former rivalry. And I did play against Exeter a few years ago.
How did you get on that day?
We got beat 35-12, something like that. They had quite a few good names in the team. They had like Matt Jess, Tom Johnson was playing, Richard Baxter.
Bullies.
Daniel Toohey was playing, Drana Nui, who's at Worcester. Like,
so you didn't disgrace yourself that day.
Quite a lot of good players. So yeah, that does kind of put me against Exeter a little bit. But everything I hear about Bath, the city, the ground, the place is so positive. And I love the way that they're playing rugby at the moment. So I think I'm going to put Exeter through to the boot room. And drop... Sorry. Put Bath through to the boot room.
What a joke!
Put Bath through to the boot room and drop Exeter.
Wow.
That's exactly what I was hoping you'd say.
And that's surely no reflection on Exeter Chiefs.
No, it's a direct reflection.
Because I think they've got, again, because I'm a match announcer at Sale Sharks, so I see all the away fans. I think they've got the best fans. Yeah. And then they have the best relationship between players and fans of any team that I've ever seen.
I have to admit, when I watched Bath Exeter in December, I wished that the Exeter fans were the Bath fans, so therefore I could get the best of all worlds, because they were awesome.
I have always had a bit of a soft spot for Exeter. I like them as the kind of plucky underdogs and doing everything right, but I don't think I'd want to support them full time.
So basically, you're just a glory hunter, aren't you? That's basically what we've learned.
Maybe.
There we go. At Rugby Podcast, if you want to get in touch, if your team hasn't been represented yet and you think, actually, you want egg chasers to follow your team or Phil, and us to come down and watch a game and do a podcast from your ground and basically just shout about how brilliant your team is through Phil. His fandom is up for grabs at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and you could have it. Right. I thought it would be quite appropriate to have a little bit of rugby okey at this point.
Excellent.
I don't know if it's going to be any better than Alex Corbisiero's rapping last week, because he was back with some rapping, but it seems appropriate. With we sort of linked the fan free agency and X Factor thing with Phil having to make a difficult decision about who to put through to Boot Room. Well, someone has done in rugby okey this week a very, very X Factor style song. And it's Richard Palfreman of London Irish, one of their young guns there at London Irish. He gave his front of the bus rendition of You Raise Me Up by Westlife.
Oh, wow.
That fine Irish boy band. So here he is. This is Richard Palfreman from the London Irish YouTube channel that we've spotted.
Troubles come and my heart burdens me. Island still and wait here in the silence. Until
that big grin, he's loving it.
Sit a while.
Wow.
Go on, Rich, give it some, fella.
You raise me up so I can stand on mountains.
That's awful.
You raise me up.
Oh, God.
Walk on stormy seas. I am strong when I am on your shore.
It's better when he was really committing to it.
Yeah.
Raise
he's back, he's not so sure anymore, is he?
You can see just behind the eyes, he's going, what am I doing? What have I done this for? His arms are in the air and he's waving side to side. There you go. Thank you, Richard Palfreman, for that fine rendition there. Lovely.
Thanks, Tim.
Pleasure.
Yeah, great one.
Right. So we've got third test England, New Zealand. How do you see that one going down? We've already touched upon the fact that New Zealand could ring the changes, but would they also not want to
I don't think they will.
Drive the nail in and go 3-0, off you go back to England.
Yeah, I think they will do that. I think they'll play their strongest team. They might make one or two changes, but nothing major. And I think England as well will try and keep a fairly consistent team. I think it'd be better to keep a fairly consistent team, because that was their weakness, or arguably a weakness.
Do you think England are going to be rattled, or do you think they're going to look at it as like we're closer to beating them?
It's interesting, because I came away from it feeling like England had taken a bit of a beating, even though they only lost by 1 point. Mm. So I don't know what the mentality in the camp will be, whether they think we were so close and like almost won it, or whether they felt like they were outplayed.
That 5 minutes before half-time, I think that was where the game was won and lost. They butchered a try. And
if Tuilagi scores that and it goes 17-3 or 17-6 at half-time.
And there was also that one where, you know, Rob Webber just scrambled towards the line. They were right on the line. They should have scored a try there. England should have had a bigger lead at half-time.
Yes.
They gave away that stupid penalty and they slotted it, and it was 10-6 instead of 17-3. Mm. And I think that's where the game is won and lost for England.
Agree. I think that England might do it this week. I think they might have enough. I think New Zealand will be a bit more relaxed because they've won the series. There's no pressure on them or anything like that. And I think England might have a chance to do it.
I feel they're just warming up. I thought maybe they caught them cold, first test. Second test, then okay, but it feels like a bigger beating, although the scoreline was smaller, and I think this week it's gonna be bad. I hope it's not. I'd like to see England win, but I don't think they're going to.
What do you reckon, Tim?
I have to agree with Jay. I think New Zealand aren't going to want to let up. That's not in their nature, and they haven't lost it at home in 5 years. And I think they're going to want to send England packing with a message.
Yeah.
And I think they'll be almost, I think New Zealand will almost be annoyed that England got as close as they did because the game was kind of won. So I think they could potentially win at a canter. That said, if you had to say the curve that England are on, they're going to get better. New Zealand, are they going to get a lot better than they are? Don't know.
No. Let's hope not. But there's other games next week.
There is. Well, watch out for the early kickoff. Yeah, 6 a.m. Australia, France. I'm hoping it's more like the first week than the first test than the second test.
Yeah. And even if you do just watch it for the lovely French kit, even if it's a terrible game.
Dreamy.
Yeah, it's particularly like the 6 o'clock kickoff. So get up about 5:30 and just watch them warming up in that red training kit.
Go back to bed then.
Yeah.
or the game will put you back to sleep. One of the two.
So I think Australia will complete a whitewash there.
Yes. South Africa?
They're going to win. Again,
game over.
They're going to bully Wales once more.
Yep.
Afraid so.
and Argentina against Scotland.
Is it real Argentina or not?
That's on Friday night, that game.
Oh, Scotland.
Argentina-Scotland.
Oh, gets unbeaten Dirk Cotton. Who's Dirk Cotton?
I'm going to go for Argentina on that one.
Hmm.
I reckon they might beat Scotland.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they bring any of their like European stars back, but they're playing pretty well against a strong island. Like they've lost twice, but had good accounts of themselves in two close games against a strong island team. So... Mm. Yeah, Argentina at home to do it, to win.
Oh, by the way, Fiji are looking really good, aren't they, as one of the sort of second-tier nations. They're looking really strong. They pumped Tonga, has to be said. Six tries they got, and they just thrashed them in the Pacific Nations tournament.
Yeah.
And let's not forget Crusaders are playing England Tuesday morning. That's an 8 a.m. kickoff.
I don't know what's wrong with me today. I've called Alex Cuthbert, Ollie Cuthbert, who used to play wing for Bath, and I've called Fern Cotter, Dirk Clotter, who's actually a coach for the Atlanta Falcons. Unbelievable.
JB, I think it's the more of a mute you get, the more stupid you're getting.
Yeah, bigger you get in the gym.
Yeah, maybe.
And you are bigger than you've ever been.
Not as big as I've ever been.
Really?
A bit bigger.
I think in terms of good weight, you're as big as you've ever been.
Yeah. Yes, maybe.
You've been fatter, but...
I've definitely been fatter.
You've not been as big and lean as you are. I think you're just getting more stupid. Yeah. That's all that's happening.
Yeah, and by the way, if there's any local teams other than Broughton Park, who want to give me a bit of cash to come and play, I'm open to that. I can play anywhere. I will happily drop down a few levels to get 25 quid a game. Not even an issue. So if
you're mercenary, Jay.
I'm going to be 100% a mercenary, yeah.
What sort of... How much money is there in lower... Like, again, this is just rumour and conjecture.
Rumoured, right? If you drop down two levels from where Broughton Park is to a club rumoured to be around Altrincham called Bowden, apparently...
Rumoured to be around Altrincham.
You could get 25 quid a game, which is unbelievable.
I heard they were paying more than that a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I heard that. I can't believe they are. They're a terrible team.
There's a rumour that when I played for Newbury, I got a club car.
No, you didn't.
I got a club
really?
Car. It had the big crest on the front. I had to bring a few boys from Bath when I was at Bath Uni. So there was three of us that went from Bath Uni to Newbury. Got a car, and it was 25 quid every training session. And if you played, it was 50 quid a game, 100 quid for a win.
I've never been paid to play, but I used to get 60 quid expenses to get from Manchester to Colwyn Bay. And I was just delighted with that. Just absolutely delighted that someone would pay me money.
I think it's bonkers. I think I also was there at Manchester when the money ran dry.
Yeah.
And there was no loyalty to the club whatsoever. And everyone left. And the club just dive-bombed out of the leagues.
Everyone had been brought
still
in.
Still going down now. Yeah. It might have stopped. Like, it might be able to turn itself around.
Well, they might
Five
have hit the
years,
bottom.
Though.
I know a guy whose first playing agreement was at Birkenhead Park, and it was 10 pints and a curry of your choice from the local takeaway.
Like talking.
That's more like it.
But I'm strictly of the opinion, if you're in the lower leagues and if you want me to come run your club, I'm happy to do that. Do not pay players. You can pay a coach, do not pay players. And if you're going to pay players, don't give them cash, give them beer. Because they'll stay around and they won't even know they're getting paid, but they'll just be happy.
There's a club in Manchester called Burnage, and that's how they do it. They get it's like gym membership, curry after training, and it creates a good club, camaraderie.
Burnage.
Exactly, a good club.
Yeah.
Good club. And that's how you do it.
That is good.
That's how you do it. Anyway, we've gone off on a lovely tangent there. Maybe we can revisit that at a future point. But that's it for this Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter is where you can find us and react to anything you've heard. Otherwise, just nice one, JB.
Cheers, Tim.
And nice one, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.